Greetings, everyone, and welcome to The Law Hour, an editorial review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about The Law Hour, please visit my webpage. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, The Law Hour, an editorial review, brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on billions for the bankers and debts for the people right after this. You know, the income tax and Social Security programs are not compatible with our traditional American values, and that's because these two programs are the second and the eighth planks of the Communist Manifesto. These programs call for a heavy progressive income tax in place of tithing. Social Security is a social welfare scheme that takes the place of strict liability and individual responsibility. The income tax requires of us that we serve two masters in violation of Matthew 6, verse 24. The income tax requires of us that we rob God in violation of Malachi 3, verse 8. This income tax requires of us that we commit idolatry in violation of Exodus 20, verse 3. The income tax requires of us that we use unjust weights and balances in violation of Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. And the income tax requires that we sign contracts with foreign and alien gods in violation of Exodus 23, verses 32 and 33. Social Security violates the strict liability statute in Exodus 21, verses 28 through 36, and Social Security violates the 10th commandment by appealing to our lust and greed. Now, we're taught to call that income redistribution. The scripture calls it exactly what it is: covetousness and theft, in violation of Exodus 20, verses 15 and 17. Now, you know, the God of Israel gave us a better way of life than that, and our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention followed that better way, and that's why I contend that you and I ought to learn how to practice a better way of life than income tax and Social Security. Now, for more information about tax and status, why don't you call the law school at 417-273-4967. Be sure to ask for my free general law CD package. Now, that's a 4-hour commentary on the Gordon Law School. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free of charge. Tax and status is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to the website georgegordon.org, click onto the email, and send me an email request for your free general law CD package. That's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about billions for the bankers. The banking industry in America has made a killing. They've made a lot of money. They own just about everything in the country, and we Americans owe double. Get this? We owe double what everything in America is worth to the banks plus interest. Well, as of 1977, it's a little more than that by now. That's right. Sheldon Emery reported in Billions for the Bankers and Debts for the People as early as 1977, if we Americans had set out to pay off all the debts that we owed to Bank of America and Chase Manhattan and all these bankers, that if we sold everything in America, all the land, all the buildings, all the cattle, all the chattel, all the automobiles, everything in the country, we would still owe them double what everything in America is worth plus interest. And that was 35 years ago, wasn't it? Well, not quite 35, but pushing on to 30, that was 1977. Well, Andrew Jackson, remember in the last program I read you part of Andrew Jackson's veto message to the Congress over the U.S. National Bank in 1836. Now, Jackson had his finger on the pulse of reality early on. He said that if the bank, this is the U.S. National Bank, today we call it the Federal Reserve System or the Federal Reserve Bank, he said if the bank were rechartered in perpetuity, the present stockholders and those inheriting their rights as successors in interest would be established as a privileged order, clothed both with great political power and enjoying immense pecuniary advantages from their connection with government. Should its influence become concentrated, as it may, under the operation of such an act as this, in the hands of a self-elected directory whose interests are identified with those of the foreign stockholders, will there not be cause to tremble for the independence of our country in war? Their power would be great whenever they might choose to exert it. Should the stock of the bank principally pass into the hands of the subjects of a foreign country, what would be our condition? All its operation would be in aid of the hostile fleets and hostile armies without. Controlling our currency, receiving our public monies, and holding thousands of our citizens in dependence, it would be more formidable and more dangerous than the naval and military power of the enemy. And you know, boys and girls, that's precisely where we are today. China holds a stranglehold economically over America. They're sitting over there with $300 billion of foreign exchange. We require nearly $3 billion a day just to pay our bills, and we're borrowing it from who? Our enemies, the Chinese, and our former enemies, the Japanese. Now, how long do you think that's going to go on? But Jackson went on to say, it is maintained by some that the bank is a means of exercising the constitutional power to coin money and regulate the value thereof. Congress has established a mint to coin money and passed laws to regulate the value thereof. The money so coined, with its value so regulated, and such foreign coins as the Congress may adopt are the only currency known to the Constitution. Now remember, he wrote this in 1834. He understood that the only constitutional money was prescribed in Article 1, Section 10. Then why are we using Federal Reserve notes today? Now, he goes on to say, but if they, Congress, have the power to regulate the currency, it was conferred to be exercised by themselves and not to be transferred to a private corporation. If the bank be established for that purpose with a charter unalterable without its consent, Congress have parted with its power for a term of years during which the Constitution is a dead letter. It is neither necessary nor proper to transfer its legislative power to such a bank and therefore unconstitutional. It is to be regretted that the rich and powerful too often bend the acts of government to their selfish purposes. In the full enjoyments of the gifts of heaven and fruits of superior industry, economy, and virtue, every man is equally entitled to protection by law. But when the laws undertake to add to those natural and just advantages, artificial distinctions to grant titles, gratuities, gratitudes, or exclusive privileges to make the rich richer and the potent more powerful, the humble members of society, the farmers, mechanics, and laborers, who have neither the time nor the means of securing favors to themselves, have a right to complain of the injustice of their government. Hey, boys and girls, isn't that where we're at today? There are no necessary evils in government. Its evils exist only in its abuses. If it could confine itself to equal protection, and as heaven does its rain, shower its favors alike on the high and the low, the rich and the poor, it would be an unqualified blessing. In the Bank Act before me, there seems to be a wide and a necessary departure from these principles. Nor is our government to be maintained or our union preserved by invasions of the rights and powers of the several states. In thus attempting to make our government strong, we make it weak. Its true strength consists in leaving individuals and states as much as possible to themselves, in making itself felt not in its power, but in its beneficence, not in its control, but in its protection. Not in binding the states more closely to the center, but in leaving each to move unobstructed in its proper orbit. Experience should teach us wisdom. Most of the difficulties that our government now encounters and most of the dangers which impend over our union have sprung from an abandonment of the legitimate objects of government by our national legislature and the adoption of such principles as are embodied in this Bank Act. Many of our rich men have not been content with equal protection and equal benefits, but have besought us to make them richer by acts of Congress. It is time to pause in our career, to review our principles, and if possible, to revive that devoted patriotism which distinguished the sages of the Revolution and the fathers of this Union. If we cannot at once, in justice to interests invested under improvident legislation, make our government what it ought to be, we can at least take a stand against all new grants of monopolies and exclusive privileges, such as rechartering a private bank of issue, against any prostitution of our government to the advancement of the few at the expense of the many, and in favor of compromises and gradual reform in our code of laws and system of political economy. I have now done my duty to my country in vetoing this measure. Compilation of the messages and papers in the President's by James Richardson, a representative from Tennessee, published by Authority of Congress, Volume 2, pages 576 to 591. Now, President Jackson had an embittered battle on his hands in order to accomplish what he set out to do. He decided to withdraw government money from the bank to pay current expenses and to deposit future government revenues in selected state banks. In 1834, the Senate passed a resolution of censure against Jackson. Bank President Bedell, who had bribed the Senate heavily in order to get this resolution passed, said that this worthy president thinks that because he has scalped Indians and imprisoned judges, that he is to have his way with the bank. Well, he is mistaken. So said Bank President Biddle. There ensued a struggle for power between the bank and the executive branch of government in which the bankers lost. The struggle was to prove that President Jackson was correct in his statements that a private, monopolistic bank, independent of government regulation, should not be entrusted with the public finances. In 1836, the Second Bank of the United States passed out of existence with its charter expired. During his presidency, Andrew Jackson fulfilled his campaign and inaugural promise. The federal constitution must be obeyed, states' rights preserved, our national debt must be paid, direct taxes and loans avoided, and the federal union preserved. These are the objects that I have in view, and regardless of all consequences, will carry into effect. Now, for the first and only time in the history of our government, the national debt was reduced to zero. Now, this story is taken from the Merit Student Encyclopedia, Volume 10. Now, there was a time in America when we practiced just weights and balances. We practiced the scriptural principles. Today, a bank, a central bank, a monopolistic central bank, the fifth plank to the Communist Manifesto, has now, since 1913, been issuing our money. How do you like it, boys and girls? Now, if you think that's good, you certainly have a right to your opinion. And you should be in hog heaven because that's where we're at. Now, there's no such thing as an action without an equal opposite reaction. Do you remember that old principle? You know, actions have consequences. And I'm not going to prevent the consequences of this Federal Reserve Bank. At least I'm not going to change anything here in the nation. The people of America, all 280 million of them, seem to love paper money. But just as it was in the days of President Jackson, we have a separate monetary system. Now, you'll remember that he said it's unconstitutional. This paper money is unconstitutional. The only constitutional money in the United States is gold and silver coin. And we have gold and silver coin being minted every day here in the United States. Now, with this story in mind, let's back up a little bit. Remember where we were talking about the International Forecaster. Well, the International Forecaster, and we're citing now from the April 2005 number 4 issue, volume 9, number 4-4. And this issue here is put out by Robert Chapman, or the author, the editor here is Robert Chapman, an economist. And he's been complaining, I would say for 10, 15 years, rather vociferously about inflation and about the Federal Reserve and the monetary policies that we've embarked upon here in the United States. He's not alone. There are many, many other conservative newsletter writers that have been complaining about it. Not that it's going to change anything. We don't have a President Jackson in the White House today in the form of George Bush or Bill Clinton. We haven't had a president like Jackson since, President Jackson. And as a result of that, the consequences of this paper money has now come to fruition. And here we are, the year 2005. Listen to what Chapman has to say. On Wednesday, April the 19th, our president signed a bankruptcy bill. The measure would require people with incomes above a certain level to pay some or all of their credit card charges, medical bills, and other obligations. Those who will be hit hard are low-income working people, single mothers, minorities, and the elderly. It'll also remove a safety net for those who have lost their jobs or face crushing medical bills. People have 6 months until the law takes effect to escape the tougher guidelines. Now, we have an epidemic of consumer information breaches, the latest being DSW Shoe Warehouse. Thieves stole 1.4 million credit card numbers in March. The thefts are scaring consumers and retailers alike. We have had a dozen companies tell us how incompetent they are. Ameritrade joined the ranks of losers this week. The only real solution is to stop using credit cards. All right, now, let's think about this for a minute. You know, back in Jackson's day, in 1835, there weren't any credit cards, and we Americans seemed to get by quite nicely. We became the wealthiest, most powerful nation in the world without credit cards. We've become the world's number one debtor nation with credit cards. Now, what does that tell us? Stop using credit cards. Why participate in our own subversion and destruction? Why should we aid the bankers in their stated goal of enslaving us to the New World Order? It's always beyond me how conservatives will write about and talk about the Federal Reserve and the paper money and how bad it is and one thing and another, but they go right on using it. And I think while I'm at it, I'm going to point this out to Bob Chapman, good guy that he is. But I want you to notice something here. Subscription and renewal information. 1 year, $129.95, U.S. funds. Make check payable to Robert Chapman, not International Forecaster, and then mail to Post Office Box 510-518, Punta Gorda, Florida, 33951. He goes on to say, please include your name and address, telephone number and email address. We accept Visa and MasterCard charges. Now, let me pause right there, Bob. We accept Visa and MasterCard. And we take your checks, make checks payable to. Now, here's Bob Chapman on page 10. He says the only real solution is to stop using credit cards. And Bob Chapman, like everybody else, says, well, gee, you know, if I tell people not to use credit cards and don't send me a check, I won't sell as many subscriptions. And you know, Bob, you're right. You won't. I run a school here and I take gold coin. And it's probably true. I probably don't make as many sales as I could if I took checks and credit cards and so on. And maybe once in a while I could make an exception to the rule. But you know, if we're opposed to the Federal Reserve, if we're opposed to checks and credit cards, if we're opposed to paper money, well, then, shouldn't we take a stand? If we're going to be leaders and we're going to be the opposition, you know, the loyal opposition, shouldn't we practice what we preach. Now that's my message to Don McElvaney and Franklin Sanders and Bob Chapman and all the rest of the newsletter writers and conservatives out there. If there's an evil somewhere, why don't we take a stand like Andrew Jackson did, and come hell or high water, let's stick with the stand and let's do what's right. Now there's a solution to this Federal Reserve morass. I'm not complaining about the Federal Reserve, and I'm one of the few guys in the country that I'm not complaining about the IRS and the income tax, since I don't pay it and participate in it. Now when I was paying it and participating in it, I complained. You know, I'm not complaining about Social Security. If the president's program of individual accounts is enacted, well, God bless the president and God bless all of you people with your independent accounts. And if the wisdom of the nation is we don't want these independent accounts, we want to go on with Social Security like we have over the past 70 years, then God bless all of you. You know, once I dropped out of Social Security, I can sit here and say, well, what you people do with your money is your business. But I thought that I would point out to you that there are consequences. Now, in the Bible, there is a guy by the name of God. At least that's what we call him. We call him God. He says, don't practice usury and interest. Don't use unjust weights and balances. Gave us the same message. Don't use credit cards. Credit cards are unjust weights and balances. They have attached to them interest and usury. God said, don't charge interest and usury. Don't participate in that. Don't be in an accessory before the fact or after the fact. Stay out of it altogether. If you wouldn't do business with the mafia, why would you do business with a bank? I pointed out to you last time that the state of Missouri enacted a law with a Democratic Congress, Democratic legislature, and a Democratic governor called Title Loan Companies that charge 10% interest. Well, it's 9.9. 9.9% interest, 118% interest per year. My God, I said it before, I'm going to say it again. The mafia never charged that kind of interest. And you call them usurers. Now, if you're out of the market, this is Bob Chapman again. He says, if you're out of the market, talking about stocks and bonds, stay out or be short. Do not get fooled by the dead cat bounces. The technical damage is obvious and rally should be used to lighten up. You have to be defensive and be in gold and silver related assets or bonds, and you'll even lose in bonds. Well, now, wait a minute. If you're going to lose in bonds, excuse me, boys and girls, if you're going to lose in bonds, then why do you want to be in bonds? If you're going to lose in stocks, why would you want to be in stocks? Now, I suggest gold and silver, and all of the conservative newsletter writers suggest gold and silver, but I want to tell you that there's as many liars, thieves, cheats, and frauds out there selling gold and silver as there are frauds, cheats, liars, and thieves selling siding, for crying out loud. Had a guy come in here the other day, sent $30,000 off to this gold guy, and he never sent him his gold. Well now, boys and girls, there's an old business adage, an old business proverb, and it says this, never risk more than you can afford to lose. Now this young fellow sent $30,000 off. Now I don't know about you, but I couldn't send $30,000 through the mail to a stranger on a business deal. I don't have $30,000 to lose. I don't have $30,000, but if I had $30,000, I wouldn't have $30,000 to lose. Never risk more than you can afford to lose. You know, and I go to make a transaction, I put my money on the counter, and I let the other guy put his gold on the counter, and then I put my hand on the gold, and he puts his hand on the paper, and we make our transaction right then and there. I walk out with the gold, and he walks out with the paper. Or vice versa, but I don't risk money like that. And I want to caution all of you listeners out there, you know, you listen to old George and he says you should buy gold and silver. Well, don't send your money through the mail to a stranger in quantities in excess of that which you can afford to lose. Why don't you get some recommendations before you send money off? And you know, if you'll just look in your yellow pages in your city, Cleveland, Ohio, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Tampa, Florida, Los Angeles, California, there's going to be some coin stores with gold brokers. Now, you may pay a higher premium, you may pay a higher commission than you would down the street, but at least you're going to get your money because you're right there. But when you go to send it through the mail, don't you think you should have some recommendations from somebody that says, yeah, I've dealt with this guy for 20 years, and he's never stolen a dime. I mean, I can recommend some brokers that don't steal. I'm not in the gold business. I'm not here to push gold and silver. I don't know if Bob Chapman sells gold and silver or the Magombo. Kitco does. Dallas Gold and Silver does. Franklin Mint does. If you're going to deal with the Franklin Mint or with Kitco or some company that's dealing in interstate commerce and so on, they're probably more reputable dealing through the mail. But boy, I wouldn't send $30,000 to Kitco or anybody else sight unseen without knowing them and having done business with them a number of times. So tuck that one away in your heart, boys and girls. Never risk more than you can afford to lose, and if you can't afford to lose it, then don't send it. I've had three or four people complain that they've lost, not because of any recommendations that I've made, but because they have tried to move out of paper and into gold and silver, and so they moved out of paper and it got ripped off by some damn gold dealer. So watch out for that. Now, Chapman goes on to say, the conference board said its gauge of the likely performance of the economy over the next 3 to 6 months fell 0.4% after a 0.1% rise in February. This is the biggest decline in 2 years. If energy prices stay about where they are, there will be little recovery in the second half of the year. So if gasoline prices stay at $2.50 a gallon, you can forget about further recovery. Now that's what this forecaster predicts. Historically, my observation has been as gas prices or as energy prices go up, the economy goes down. Just that simple. It's been my observation. That's what Chapman is telling you, and that's what you can prepare for. Now, people write me emails every once in a while or a letter, and they'll say, you know, Gordon, you're a real downer. Downer hell. I'm here to make money. I don't make these economic decisions that are being made by Alan Greenspan and George Bush and by the neocons. That's not my bailiwick. But I can sure stand up and say, wait a minute, boys and girls, I showed you that in the last program. Here's a guy, remember the guy with the cattle? He sold 21 head in 1970 or 69, and he sold 21 head recently. And he said, in 69, I went out and took my proceeds and bought a new car. I can't buy a new car with what I sold 36 years later. And that's right. In constant dollars, you're getting paid more dollars, but you're losing purchasing power. And that's the trick. Your mind is on how many dollars you made in 69 and how many dollars you made today. Four times as many dollars today buys half as much. Four times as many dollars buys half as much. Don't be deceived by that. That being the case, then we have to do something different than what we're doing is paying all of our money out in interest to these banks and bankers through credit cards. It is not uncommon for a student to come into this school and tell me when we get into economics that he has $10,000, $20,000, or $30,000 out on credit cards. Let's just take $10,000. You got $10,000 out on your credit cards times 1.18. That's $11,800. You have to pay $1,800 this year in interest to service that debt. Now, it takes 27 years to amortize that debt out. If you take your card at the minimum payment and you just start paying out, it's going to take you 27 years. So if it costs you $1,800 over 27 years, let's take $1,800 times 27. That's $48,600. Now, you borrowed $10,000, and over 27 years, you're going to pay nearly $50,000 back. In fact, it'll be over $50,000 when you get it done, because you're paying interest on interest. But it's going to be five times. Can you see the profit that these bankers make off those credit cards? You borrow $10,000 and pay back $50,000. You could increase your standard of living over the next 27 years by five times by paying cash. If you'd pay cash. Because you're going to pay the credit card. You're going to pay all that money anyway. You're going to pay the $10,000 one way or another. Plus $40,000 in interest. Now, that's just crazy. Well, it's crazy to an old man like me. Now, if you're just a young buck and you want to get out there and work hard and work for the bankers, you know, don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. But that's why these credit cards are so popular. They're convenient. They get you what you want, and they get you what you want right now. Right now. Instant gratification. You just have to pay five times what you get. So you're going to buy one for you and four for the banker. One for you and four for the banker. Well, I'm not buying four for the banker. I'm buying five for me. And that's what I teach in my business school. That's what I teach in my tax school. That's one for us and nothing for the banker. It's two for us and nothing for the banker. It's three for us and nothing for the banker. Now, that's what I teach. That's what I practice. Yeah, I got to give you a reminder here. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're also heard 7 days a week worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to the website, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It's open to individuals and by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. And one last reminder that the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of the network or of this radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, just go to the website, georgegordon.org, or call the Law School Direct, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call Direct, 417-273-4967. Okay, we're talking about billions for the bankers and debts for the people. Well, Sheldon Emery broke the ice in 1977, but I read you the veto message by President Jackson. President Jackson said that he was going to veto that national bank in 1834. He did. President Lincoln needed money to finance the Civil War, so he went to the bankers. Salmon P. Chase said that was the biggest mistake he made in his life. And I don't know how many American patriots and citizens, Henry Ford, Thomas Edison, and many, many others have said, you know, these central banks are the bane of democracy, the bane of government. I don't know why in the hell we keep going back to them, but we do. We do. And it's been historical. I mean, it isn't something that just came upon the United States, you know, in the Clinton years or something. It's been with us for 100 years or more. It's been with us for thousands of years. Human beings are motivated by these five motivators. Vanity, number one. Jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. Five motivators of human nature. And the bankers are just masters at manipulating human beings and human nature. Just that simple. It's like a car salesman on a used car lot. When you walk onto the used car lot, you're putty in his hands. He's got what you want. And he's going to stroke you. He's going to appeal to your vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear until he gets your name on the dotted line. Then he's got you. People have been doing that for thousands of years, so if you've done it, don't feel bad. But it's time to make a meaningful change, and there's not too much time left. I don't think that we're dealing with decades anymore. I think we're dealing now with months or maybe a year or two. Chapman seems to have the same view here, that 2006 or 2007, the rubber's going to meet the road with a thud. Anyway, here's some more. He says, the U.S. is at it again, outflanking Russia. Well, that's good to know. They have the Ukraine signing secret deals with Turkmenistan for the purchase of natural gas. It seems that the Ukraine signed a long-term agreement set to begin in 2006. Ukraine would purchase 50 to 60 billion cubic meters of gas from Turkmenistan. Turkmenistan only produces 58 billion cubic meters. So the Ukraine is going to purchase 50 to 60. They only produce 58. That means they can't fulfill both contracts. So if Russia is shut out, it would be a serious blow to the Russian leadership's geopolitical plans. And the loss of the gas would keep Russia from dominating the European gas market. And this is the sort of thing that starts wars. This move will have major repercussions. And one major obstacle to the Ukraine-Turkmen deal is the matter of transporting this gas, is the Gazprom contracted Central Asia pipeline with a capacity of 90 billion cubic meters per year. So they couldn't, even if they could produce the 90 billion cubic meters, they've sold more, and sold it to some pretty big players like Russia. You know, you stick it to the Russians, and I'm sure that at some point in time they're going to come back and stick it to you. Now, we Americans, you know, have stuck our nose into a number of pies around the world, and I'm not sure that we're going to get away with it forever. You know what happened in World War II when the Japanese got a belly full of it? They attacked Pearl Harbor. Now, as it turned out, we won the war, but do we really need to go to war? Is it really in our best interest? These wars, by the way, are diversionary tactics to keep our minds off of what's really going on. The war in Iraq keeps your mind off of what's going on here in the economy. That's the design of it, and that's what it's accomplished. It's time to pay more attention to what means something to us. Now, the government is pushing for aid to struggling airline carriers, probably so, because the benefit or the pension benefit guarantee trust won't have to assume their pension liabilities. Now, let me explain that one. You see, the airline has a pension plan. Well, the federal government also has a pension program. It's called the Pension Benefit Guarantee Trust. It's kind of like Social Security. It's gonna guarantee, it's gonna be a watchdog over these companies. And they have the power to take over these pension funds. They have the power to make these airlines pay into these pension funds. And if the pension fund goes upside down, well, then the federal government steps in. So watch how this one is going to work out. So the government is pushing for aid to struggling airlines, probably so that the Pension Benefit Guarantee Trust won't have to assume those pension liabilities. The plan would allow carriers to defer pension payments to resolve shortfalls in bankruptcy. Payments would be spread across 25 years that are due within 4 years. Frankly, we see very little chance of the airline surviving. Fuel costs are not going to fall appreciably. Overall, corporate pension plans are short or underfunded by more than $500 billion. Airline pensions had a negative balance of $21 billion last year, down from a positive balance of $3 billion in 2000. Now, let me pause here for a moment and make a couple of observations. In this newsletter by itself, General Motors, that's GM, and Ford are facing bankruptcy. He says the airlines over here are underfunded. GM, remember, is only funded to 80% of its pension funds. And the government's going to have to take over these pension funds and guarantee those funds. Now, where is the money going to come from? If our government is borrowing $3 billion a day to pay its bills, where in the hell are they going to get the money to jack all these up. Notice all these problems. We didn't have these problems in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. And this is the ultimate end of paper money. That's what happened in Bolivia, in Argentina, Brazil, Colombia, all the banana republics. Every government in the world that's ever used paper money has been forced into bankruptcy in just exactly the way you see it coming down in the United States. And that's why I contend that it's time for you to start thinking for yourself and get off of this meat wagon. And you can. Let me tell you, if you're making under $100,000 a year, it takes just 36 months. Not 36 years. 36 months. To start at zero COD and to create a stream of income, which should be in the form of property, not income, of $100,000 in purchasing power per year. Now, you think I'm whistling Dixie through a straw hat? I don't have anything to sell you. I'm not sitting here telling you to go buy this book or buy that book or something else. I offer a free CD package. That's the place to start. Doesn't cost anything to learn what it is I've got to say. So why don't you write for that free CD package and see if I know something. Now, I'm an old man today and I don't need your money. You know, I could be retired if I wanted to, but I don't. I don't want to retire. I'm going to work until I die. I hope I die at age 110, and I hope I'm sitting here at the broadcast, doing my broadcast and doing my thing when I'm 110. We've lost our purchasing power, and our government and our bankers, our universities and colleges have been lying to us for years, and we believed them in good faith. We invested our money into the stock market and lost our ass in the 1990s. That's nothing new. We did the same thing in the 1920s and lost our ass in the 1930s. And then you got the government over here inflating the currency at the rate of 4.7% a year. 4.7% a year. From 1960 to 2000, it averaged 4.7% per year. And that's a 4.7%, or just rounded off to 5% tax, or a 5% theft, compounded annually for 40 years. And we weathered that storm. We lived through that. And today, you got 80% of the women of America working out in the workforce. And I presume that all you ladies want to be out there working in the workforce, because in 1940, you weren't. You were stay-at-home moms, and you were living your lives, and we didn't make you go out and work. Today, you have to work. You have to. That's to make ends meet and to keep your head above water. I say it's time to come up with a different program. And you know, the Bible has a different program. A different program. It's got a program that deals with just weights and balances, gold and silver, the same program that we had in America from 1787 to 1933, gold and silver coin. Same program that President Jackson in 1834 said we ought to stick with that. It's a better program than paper. That's when he vetoed the paper and the bank. You don't have a president today that's going to veto the paper or veto the bank. And that's just where reality's at. Now remember, this is the International Forecaster. I recommend it highly. This guy's name is Robert Chapman. If you want to make your check or your credit card out to Robert Chapman, that's what he tells you here on page one. I think if it was me, I would send Mr. Chapman a postal money order. Postal money order. How's that? Or why don't you do something really wild and crazy? Let me just compute this out for you right now. I don't have Bob Chapman's permission to do this, but I'm going to stick my neck out here. Maybe Bob Chapman's going to call me and tune me up. But right now, the price of gold is about $430 an ounce, round numbers. So why don't you send Bob Chapman, about 0.3 of an ounce of gold would do it. Or a quarter of an ounce. Let's try a quarter of an ounce here. If we had 430 divided by 4, $107.50. Of course, you've got to pay the cyanage and the commission on it, so that'd be just about $130. I'll bet you for $130, you can buy a $10 gold piece. $10 gold piece. Just go into your local, look this up in your Yellow Pages, and you're going to find coin stores and coin dealers in your city or a city near you. Go in and buy a $10 gold coin. It'll be a $10, what they call an eagle here, a quarter eagle, U.S. $10 gold piece. You'll get it for $130, which is the price of this newsletter, $129.95. And then send Bob Chapman that $10 gold piece. $10 gold piece. You can send it right in the mail. If you want to, you can insure it. You know, it'll cost you $3 for insurance. And send him that $10 gold piece, and I'll bet you that he will send you a subscription to the International Forecaster for $10. $10 in gold coin. Now, let me see if I'm right or wrong. Now, that's the way I do business. You know, people ask me, you know, do you want to do business in gold and silver? Now, you can work on gold and silver. You can get it right down to the penny. We have $5 gold pieces, $10 gold pieces, $25 gold pieces, and $50 gold pieces. We also have silver coins. We have silver dollars. We have silver 50-cent pieces, 25-cent pieces, and dimes. And I could send Bob Chapman $129.95 in gold and silver coin right to the penny in any given day's quotations. All you do is call Kitco or just click on to the internet, turn over to Kitco, and what is the daily price for gold and silver today? Just work right off of the spot price. And then you're going to have to add a commission. Anytime you want to buy gold or silver coin, you got to pay the gold broker a commission. And if you're going to a coin store and you're going to buy one quarter ounce coin, you're going to pay about a 7%, 8% commission on that coin. So you got a $107 spot price. Take 107 times 0.08, and it's going to cost you about $8.50 to $10, something on that order, to buy that coin. You got to pay the guy for his time, effort, and energy. Now, when you're buying 50 of those gold coins, you should not be paying that kind of high commission. It should be about 4%. And when you're getting into buying bigger and bigger amounts, then your commission can drop. You know, I've seen commissions as low as 2.5% on a $100,000 purchase. So if you got $100,000 and you want to convert that $100,000 into gold coin or silver coin, the commission should be around 2-3%. If it's $50,000, maybe 3.25%, 3.5%, is kind of negotiable. But 4% is about tops. Sometimes people charge 4.5, 5, 5.5, 6, 6.5, 7, and so on up. Anytime you're paying a commission price of 10%, I wouldn't pay 10%, not even for one coin. I'd go find another dealer. But don't be angry now, because the banks, no, are not working for you people free. You think you're going into the bank and getting any free services, you got your head up the wrong end. They're charging you 18% to 27% on your credit cards. They're charging you for checks. I had a guy the other day brought in a government refund check to get it cashed, and the damn bank held it for 13 days. That's 13 days of interest-free loan to the bank just to cash a government IRS refund check. Banks are crooks. Do you think Richard Nixon was a crook? You just tell me what bank it is out there that isn't a crook. All right, well, so much for your gold and silver lesson today. Let's take a look at part 16. The U.S. is at it again, outflanking Russia. I covered that. Artificially low interest rates stimulate massive capital spending in China. This lowers China's unit labor costs far more than if interest rates were high. Declining unit labor costs then lead to a fall in Chinese export prices and worsen the competitive position of the United States even further. Low interest rates have temporarily caused a boom in the United States. But as you can see, there is a price to be paid. If you add in money and credit, and credit creation, you have a formula for destruction. In no other two-year period since 1975 has liquidity increased so much. It is now very obvious that the Fed, by not raising interest rates more quickly, has little interest in protecting the dollar, at least at these levels. A lower dollar means higher gold prices. The latest Beige Book says price pressure has intensified in some districts. We have been pointing out for some time now that inflation is triple what the Bureau of Labor Statistics, Wall Street, and CNBC says that it is. Denial is a lie promulgated for profit and to soothe the masses. In their latest report, the Bureau of Labor Statistics has doctor, medical, surgical, and hospital costs falling. They also have cellular and wireless carrier bills falling 4.8%. The absurdities and lies go on and on. There's just no end to it. You ever heard of the Plunge Protection Team? Well, listen to this. The Plunge Protection Team is an operation put together by the White House in 1987 when the stock market dropped so precipitously there in one day. And they said, well, we got to do something to solve that problem. So they created a thing here called the Plunge Protection Team. And now it's the Federal Reserve in conjunction with the White House that steps into the market. You won't see the market collapse like it did in 1929 or 1987. They won't let it. They won't let it. See, they just walk into the market and they start buying. This is your tax dollars at work. God bless them anyway. Well, the Plunge Protection Team and the Federal Reserve have done it again. The market was well on its way to collapsing, so the Fed added $16 billion in repurchase agreements, taking the repo pool to $71.5 billion. They opened the Dow up 100 points in total arrogance, rigging every index in the most obvious manner possible. They pushed the Dow, the Standard & Poor's, and the NASDAQ progressively higher all through the session, with the Dow ending the day up 206 points. Early on, they dispatched gold by selling every time gold tried to rally. It ended at ended off 40 cents. This is what is supposed to be a free market. Well, believe us, it's not a free market. It is rigged for the insiders. And this was a sucker rally short into it. The market is going lower and gold is going higher. Now, what's happening is they're selling gold and paper gold, that is, promises to pay gold, at a lower and lower price to keep the price down. These hedges and hedge funds are bets, derivatives are bets, and they're able to manipulate the markets. And of course, this sends a signal to all of us out here in the marketplace, and we say, well, gee, I don't know if I want to buy that gold or not. It's going down. It's not moving. It's staying put. Well, if you took all of the paper that's out there promising to pay you in gold, and then you take all of the gold production, 2,500 tons a year, it'll take 15 years of production to pay off what's already promised. Now, that doesn't strike me as being an overabundance of gold out there or that the price is too high. It says to me, buy all you can get. If you got money, get rid of it, buy gold. Hang on and watch it appreciate. Or, if you prefer, go out and buy stocks. So why don't you go out here and buy your stocks and bonds and sit back and relax, and then next year or the year after, we'll come back and we'll compare notes and let's see how things went. I've got silver from 1985 at $15 an ounce, and today the price is $7 and I think it was 28 cents. I'm hanging on to my silver. I still have possession of it. I paid $15 for it. I didn't lose a dime. Just sit back and be patient. When the pendulum swings back to 16 to 1, I'll cash in. And if it doesn't cash in my lifetime, I've got my daughter well primed. It'll cash in her lifetime, and she'll cash it in. Part 19, get ready for a consistent reference to inflation as pricing power and how that is desirable, as well as indicative of a strong economy. Rising prices are not inflationary, but rather a condition to embrace. Higher commodity costs are somehow going to result in a better bottom line for stocks. Stagflation is an abject impossibility. Only the delusional can come to such a conclusion. This is our new Orwellian world. So when you hear these clowns come on TV and radio and writing newspaper articles or magazine articles. And they tell you that inflation is pricing power. It's desirable. And it's indicative of a strong economy. Rising prices are not inflationary, but rather they're a condition that we should all embrace. Higher commodity costs are somehow going to result in a better bottom line for stocks. Stagflation? Forget it. It's an abject impossibility. That's the kind of crap you hear in the Main Street Press. Today, right now, today, that's what you're listening to. Listen to Paul Kangas, I believe it is, on PBS. He's on every night, you know, about 10 o'clock. Listen to Paul. He'll give you the straight skinny right out of Wall Street, right out of the central bank. God, these guys sometimes make me want to puke. Let's see what we got here on page 12, part 20. Let me share another little piece with you. The Trilateral Commission met secretly last weekend in Washington to discuss the rise of China, global currency conflicts, and the pending referendum before nations of the European Union. Now, the press was barred, as usual. The speakers were. Now, get this. Get your pen and paper out here, boys and girls. Here are the speakers to this year's Trilateral Commission. Dick Cheney, Vice President. Alan Greenspan, Chairman of the Federal Reserve. Paul Wolfowitz, and Donald Rumsfeld. You got this? Paul Wolfowitz now is the new head, new president of the World Bank. Now remember what Andrew Jackson warned us about back in 1834? He said, you know, if these banks ever get hold of our economy, these foreign stockholders, you know, these internationalists, these elitists over here are going to have more power. They will control the armies and navies at your shores and on your borders. These bankers control the policy that allows 2,000 to 3,000 Mexican illegals to cross the border. This is an invasion. You know, you take 2,000 people a day. Let's just do that. 2,000 times 365 days a year. That's 730,000 people. That's 750,000 people a year. That's an army. And we're being invaded every year, year after year after year. You know, that's times 10 in 10 years. That's 7,300,000 people coming into the United States. And they get right on welfare. Or they go right to work at minimum wage and start handing the money back or sending the money back to Mexico. Which is another balance of payments problem for America. I just point that out to you because while you and I aren't going to change that policy, we can sure as hell change the circumstances that we find ourselves in relationship to that policy. We don't have to go down with the ship. We don't have to sink with the Titanic, and we don't have to go along with and participate in this criminal activity. That's why I come on the air every day and I tell you, hey, it's time for us to make some meaningful change. Well, we're just about out of time here, boys and girls. We're going to have to take this up again tomorrow night, and we'll finish up tomorrow night, same time, same station, right here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States and 7 days a week worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to the website georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that's open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. It can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Well, there's the signal. Says time's up. We've got to leave it right there. I'll see you back here tomorrow, God willing. Same time, same station. So until then, good night, friends.